Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Liberty Report. Today, with me, but not in studio, is Daniel McAdams, the co-host, but he is calling in by Skype from Dallas because of our hurricane, and we're still adjusting for that. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Dr. Paul, how are you?
Oh, we're doing well, and I imagine you'll be back in town soon because things have quieted down for our section of Texas, but of course it's worse in the eastern part of Texas, way over at Beaumont. So this has been some storm, to say the least. But anyway, we want to try to keep up the best we can with our programming, and today we wanted to talk a little bit about an executive order that came out in the midst of the hurricane on Monday, you know, when the hurricane was roaring through here. And that was, you know, not just news in Texas, it was national news. But Trump came up with an executive order that, you know, on the surface, it sounded like he was repealing an executive order that Obama had that said that, you know, military weapons would no longer be given to a local police force. It was the militarization of police departments around the country. Turns out that that might not be exactly so. It was a restriction on some weapons, but they were still getting a lot. But the new administration felt like, no, the police should have whatever they need, and they wanted to put the small restrictions that Obama had put on and remove them. And this, of course, was carried out with enthusiastic support from Jeff Sessions, and he expressed himself by what he thought about it. To me, it looks like he's ecstatic about this. This is a big deal, and he's just really, really enjoying all this idea of transferring weapons. But, you know, that invites a lot of questions about, is this a good idea? You could start off with a simple question. Is this the proper way to support police departments under our Constitution? Was this ever an intent to have a police force that was, you know, really being more controlled than ever by the federal government? I would say no, and it should end there, but that's not the case. It goes on and on. So people have accepted this notion, and there's been various reasons, and we'll go over some of those reasons. Everything from, you know, the drug war that has caused a lot of problems. Now we have the violence in the streets and the racial conflicts. They say, well, we have to have order. And for so much of what we do and what our government does, the best way they can justify is we want to make the people safe. We want to make sure the children are safe. And of course, we should police, protect our police officers, which is a justified assumption. You know, you should do it. But the big problem is how do you do it? What's the best method? Are you following the rules? Are you really accomplishing what you want? Or will militarized police actually do more harm? Because we read and hear of so many stories where the police overreact. And maybe it's a psychological thing as much as anything. When you're well-armed, maybe you're a little bit more aggressive in using these because they figure, you know, if I bust into this house or someplace, there's so little they can do to us because we have all this power. So there's probably some malinvestment in that the money and the resources go in the wrong places. So these various things that changes when we militarize our police, especially by taking U.S. government military equipment and passing it out around the country. And right now, it seems like there's very little resistance to this, except for the few in the Congress and in the Senate that are speaking out against it.
Yeah, Dr. Paul, you got it right, actually. I know this probably won't surprise many people who follow this, but this whole problem has its roots in the drug war. It started in about 1990, and the justification at the time was if these drug lords have got big military-style weapons, then by golly, our police officers have to have them too. So the vehicle for beginning the transfer was, and here's another shocker, it was the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act of 1990, that enabled the transfer of weapons. At this point, it was just small arms from the military to the police to help them achieve parity with the so-called with the drug lords and the big drug dealers. This went on for a while. There was a little reform in 1996, but as we know, reform usually means making it worse. So in 96, they passed another authorization, Section 1033, which had actually expanded it and allowed them to transfer not just weapons, but other equipment, tanks, rocket launchers, all of these crazy things we've seen. So, yes, it does have its roots in another failed federal government policy, mm-hmm. the drug war.
Right. And, you know, and what's going on now that catches attention of all Americans, it seems, and that has to do with these conflicts in the inner city. There for a while, it was only terrorists coming from foreign countries, but finally people paid attention to the statistics that there were some people who fall into that very loosely defined category of terrorists, but they never came from foreign countries. They most of the time they came, you know, from the United States. But now we have another problem, and that is the civil strife maybe leading to a civil war, for all we know, between the alt-right and the cultural Marxists. I mean, and this is very real, but it's not a reflection of the people of the United States. I just don't believe that this is spontaneous. Can you believe that could happen some other way? I think there's bad money behind it. I think it's orchestrated. I think there's a lot of false flags, and I don't think you can believe any story that you hear from either side. You have to have bad guys from both sides, you know, both from the alt-right and the cultural Marxists. And I think that's what has happened. But the strife is there, and they'll say, well, we have to have weapons now. And this will further justify the American people to get more weapons out of the military, which I'm sure the military-industrial complex aren't going to complain. So I think that we have to wait and see what happens. So, but I think right now our Skype might be down, but I think Daniel will be back with us in just a minute. But I'm sure this this problem that we have with a militarized police, it is an attitude. It's a psychological attitude that thinks that this is perfect, and it's an attitude that what is the government's role? And, you know, everybody wants to be safe, but our government and our Constitution was designed to give perfect safety and security. Yet we work on the assumption now that the federal government is going to protect us and make us safe, you know, at our local level, as well as secure in a financial and area as well. And then we extend that to claiming that we can do this around the world. So it is a real mess, you know, that we have to put up with. And I was just wondering whether Daniel is back with us right now.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry we dropped the call, but I am back.
Okay.
And I heard most of what you said. You know, you mentioned the restrictions that Obama put on this program, I think a year or so ago, and those were laudable, but actually they're relatively modest. You know, the cops, there are some fame. I mean, just Google it, you'll find a number of stories. There are some, you know, small towns in Georgia where the police are coming in with rocket-propelled grenades and driving tanks through the street. This is like boys with their toys kind of thing. But what Obama did was he restricted just a couple of things. No more tanks for local police, no more bayonets, and no more weapons above 50 caliber. So that was apparently clipping the police wings too much for President Trump and Attorney General Sessions. And so you got to get those tanks back in the hands of the police.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a way, this hints at being somewhat like asset forfeiture. The police can go out. And if they want equipment and money and financing it, they can go out and seize assets. And, of course, assets commit the crime and the people don't. And if the people aren't guilty of a crime, that's irrelevant. So they end up with equipment and they end up with more than they should have. Now, they don't have to pay for these weapons that they get from the military. The taxpayer pays indirectly, creating more problems for themselves. But to me, it's a form of economic malinvestment because there gets to be some financing either through asset forfeiture, which is stealing, as well as transferring from the federal government into a local program that shouldn't exist. And all of a sudden, you have a police force that is designed to and almost encouraged to be more aggressive than it has to be. And then you compound it with all the errors of government, why we have inner city turmoil, whether it's an economic policy or a drug war or these other things, then they justify, well, We have to do it. And if you don't go along with this, then you guys don't want to protect the people. And that's been used for a long time. It's safety that everybody has to have. And that was the story we heard, Daniel, as you recall, you know, when after 9/11, that people were calling, Ron has to support this, the encroachment of our civil liberties, the Patriot Act, because we want to be safe. And we should be able to give up a little bit of our liberties to be safe. It's part of that attitude. But of course, they need to be reminded now and then that you have neither once you accept that principle.
It really is a win-win for the state, this program, because on one hand, the police, the local police, get lots of free stuff. And there's nobody, I think, on earth who doesn't love free stuff. If you can get it, you want it. If you got a tank, you want two tanks. It's just a natural inclination. And for, as you point out, for the military, for the Defense Department, it's a big win because they can recycle out a lot of their old equipment that is probably still pretty doggone good and get some shiny new equipment. And it's a big win for the military-industrial complex because they continue manufacturing new weapons. So it's a big win-win for the state when it comes to finance, but it's a big lose-lose when it comes to our civil liberties.
Yes, and I think the problems that we automatically think of the inner cities being a reflective about our economic policies as well as the drug war is one thing. But if you look on the other side of it, what would it be like if you didn't have the police to take care of us and keep us safe? Well, maybe you would have a lot of private property protection. I've mentioned before in my conversations that, I live in a place which is close to chemical plants. They don't depend on the police nor the federal government for protection. They depend on their security people. And even during hurricanes and all kinds of threats like 9/11, they took care of their own safety. And how about community? Communities which are protected by themselves and they're gated community. Oh, well, only the rich will be taken care of. Well, you don't have to be rich to have an organization, a community agreement. And you don't have to be rich and defend yourself when you talk about the area where you have the least amount of police. It's probably one of the safest places to be is in the rural areas. You know, they're not safe because there's a policeman. Oh, yes, John Jones lives out there. He has a 50-acre farm, and we have to protect him. So we're going to send, I think he qualifies for 1.5 policemen to be at his gate, and we're going to send him out there and make sure he's safe. No, it doesn't happen that way. At least in Texas, we know what happens is they still believe in the Second Amendment, and they are safe. People have given up that you can't be safe any other way, and that's why they just roll over and say whatever they need. But even with that said, I think you probably saw, Daniel, there were a few groups, civil libertarian groups, that came out on our side of this, just looking at it on civil libertarians. And even they might be slanted in one way because the minorities get hit harder, you know, with this excessive militarization of the police. And that is not a racial thing as much as it's a drug thing, but rightfully so. If the police overreacted, it's a problem, I think, as a consequence of the drug war. And I do think that they do overreact at times, and it's been not good for racial relationships by excessive police force.
Well, you know, Dr. Paul, we're facing down where you and I live, this major crisis, this major disaster. People are flooded out of their homes. And you talk about people policing their own things. This may shock some of the viewers, but I'm monitoring the different Facebook groups down here to find out if our homes are going to survive or float away. But there was one great picture that caught my attention. It was about 15 guys. They all had shotguns and rifles, and they were standing behind a sign that said, "You loot, we shoot." And you want to talk about discouraging people from committing crime. But I do have to wonder about the psychological aspect of Trump's announcement on Monday. In the midst of this crisis, everyone is justifiably feeling good about the heroic efforts that are made by law enforcement and other first responders. They're just doing a tremendous job. They're in the water. They're rescuing people. And it's almost like he's trying to piggyback off of that to put in something else that's completely unrelated and sort of using and abusing people's feelings of goodwill right now.
Yes, but I think in many ways what we see happening with the police is part of a personality or a character trait of the Trump and his administration. He has a lot of generals, a lot of military people involved. And it's not, let's build a strong military force for our defense. Right now we read about one of the biggest, most vicious type of nuclear weapon is being developed, and we tested it. And I get to thinking, why do we need a bigger, more lethal nuclear weapon? Well, it's those North Koreans, you know. They may may someday, you know, do what Iraqis threatened to do. And, of course, it goes on. So there is a military mentality with this administration more than regular, more than normal. And this is why I think it spills over into the local police force, and it's an attitude. And, of course, my theme that I've talked about for so long is that the economic turmoil that's coming due to our economic system, as well as the failure of our foreign policy, is that we're going to have more crises like this, and there's going to be continuation of the National Defense Authorization Act of arresting Americans without civil liberties. We're going to have the Patriot Act, and it's constant, lose all our privacy. So that's really the big war that's going on. But I think the weaponry is symbolic of it because, you know, the more turmoil there is and the more challenge there is to the government, the more the government cracks down on us. And just look at it. You know, we're having a program soon in September about whistleblowers. That is what governments can't stand, really. That, you know, the most dangerous man there is to a government is the person that tells the truth. And, of course, we want to honor and further understand, you know, the whistleblowers that will come and tell us it, try to put the big picture together. And this issue of militarizing the police, I think, is part of that big picture, but it's probably just a small picture of the direction of our country.
Yeah, you know, Jason Ditz, writing in the American Conservative, made a very good point, which is the enthusiastic embrace of this program by President Trump. He sends a message to police that it's not only okay to get these weapons, but also it kind of encourages them to use them. It gives an imprimatur, is how Jason put it. But there is, Dr. Paul, as in many things, there is a bit of a silver lining, and it comes from someone you may have heard of, a senator from Kentucky. Has reintroduced legislation that would ban the transfer from the military to our civilian police forces of all offensive weapons. They would be able to still transfer body armor and helmets and things of this nature, but no more tanks and RPGs, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently he has put this bill in. I'm not sure if there's a House companion to it, but there are a lot of good folks in the House, I'm sure, who would be happy to do it. So there is something that we can do to fight back, which is to look at these bills and read them and embrace them and talk to other folks about them.
Yes, and I think that's what we always should do, is look for the positive side of it. And the positive side is that there's a lot of people who are looking for the truth and the information of what we can do about it. And for me, it's ideological and ideas have consequences. And the ideas of liberty and non-aggression and non-intervention really answers the problems that we have. But people have to accept the notion that you have to have self-reliance and take care of yourself. If you accept those responsibilities, you know, it can work into a pretty good society, even with the problems, because, the nature of most human beings is gracious. That is, they will help their neighbors. And even though there was some looting in this recent hurricane, there was a lot of good people out there helping them. People came from other states to help. So I think there's the goodness of people out there, too. It just seems like the special interests just love to stamp that out, and mock, you know, about, if you don't want to go to war, you're a weakling and you don't care, that sort of thing. But no, I think I think there's a lot of people out there, and of course those are the people we're trying to reach and try to get information that is valuable and always seeking the truth of the matter. Daniel, do you have a closing comment or a quick goodbye?
Well, my quick closing is I hope to get back to Lake Jackson soon. I am now looking at maps, looking for a road that I can drive back, praying that our houses are okay. And I want to thank you, Dr. Paul, for sticking around and watching out for things for us down there in Lake Jackson.
And very good. And I want to thank our viewing audience today for joining in. And It's a little disappointing that the programs aren't as smooth as they have been, but we're going to be back in order. But the important thing is we hope we get a message out that's worth listening to. Thank you very much for tuning in. Come back soon to the Ron Paul Liberty Report.